Welcome to Health IQ. I'm Munson Steed, CEO of Rolling Out, and this is the place where we actually hope that you find a reservoir of resources and individuals who are the most consummate professionals delivering information. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Thomas. She is a family therapist, and she's licensed, and we want you to hear and understand some of the emotions and some of the dynamics that might be happening during COVID. How are you, Dr. Thomas?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. So many people are at home. They're not moving around. They are now sequestered in an environment that pits their emotions and the lack of movement. What should families do during this moment?
Families during this moment need to realize that it's okay to kind of slow down and really reevaluate and assess the situation. This is not the time for business as usual in the world, and it's really necessary to see how that applies to the home. And so what that means is, because roles have changed, they've shifted, they have become strained. You know, some families are both working from home with children. Some families, one, you know, partner or parent is working and the other is not. And so it is the time to kind of assess your physical space, assess where you are mentally and emotionally, and actually kind of plan and chart out the day, the space, and everything in between, and have kind of an action plan of how to function as effectively as possible during this time.
So how? That's a great insight. How can families plan their space, plan how they function inside of home if they've never done it?
Right. One thing is, the harsh reality is, it is very difficult, not impossible, very difficult to function effectively in this time and space if you have had ongoing challenges. You know, in the medical world, they talk about pre-existing conditions. Well, there are a lot of pre-existing conditions in families as well. You have some partners who may have had challenges with intimacy. They may have had challenges with finances or child rearing. And so one of the ways is to kind of, again, have an open conversation around, how do we organize our time? How do we organize our space? What room am I working in versus the room that you're working in? Where are the children working? Who's doing what from 11 to 12? Who's cooking the breakfast? Who's cleaning up the mess in the living room? And so, it again, this action plan is very holistic, practically and logistically, but also emotionally. And so you have to kind of allocate time if you have a partner that you're living with. You know, it's very easy to kind of get triggered and have conversations going on in front of children, those who have children in the household. But some time needs to be set aside for couples to actually talk about what's going on with them emotionally, as well as they work out the logistics and the practical aspects of homeschool, remote work, and things of that nature.
So the conversation would start as from one of the individuals in the home, and they would say, "Hi, how are you today? What are we going to do?" And then how does that lead to a conversation of sitting down? So what is that dialogue like, so that you could start it as a partner?
Yeah, that dialogue is simply, "Hey, we need to talk." And I know that's a phrase that many people kind of, "All right, what did I do? What's wrong now?" But in this day and age, again, it's one of those difficult and necessary conversations. We need a game plan. We need a game plan for our schedule. I know that, you know, we've been going through XYZ for the past months or weeks prior to the pandemic. And so it's even acknowledging that that is in the atmosphere, if you will, that that is impacting somebody's mood, and now you have extra pressure, extra strain. So acknowledging the feelings in those pre-existing situations, acknowledging the practical things about, "Hey, we've got this amount for the food budget. You know, what's our grocery list? You know, our child has four assignments on a daily basis. Who's going to set up the laptop, and who's going to, you know, make sure that there are some checks and balances with that?" And then practical things. Again, you know, if somebody needs to set aside time to work in a closed room. You know, sometimes that's a difficult conversation, right? No matter what kind of space you're working in terms of the size of the space, somebody might need to go in a closed room and work for an hour or two with no interruptions. And it's okay to ask for that. And so balancing that when there are, again, multiple parents in the household. And even for those who are single parents, you know, you can have open, honest, developmentally appropriate conversations with your children, depending on their age. You know, look, mom, your daddy is going to work on this. This is what I need you to do. And then we're going to play a game at 3 o'clock or whatever the case may be. So modeling for your children also that this is the reality of what's going on. And guess what? This is how we're going to make it through the best way that we can. May not be perfect, may not be, you know, one of our most optimal days or outcomes, but we're going to make it work.
So for those who aren't good at confronting, what are other methodologies, whether it's writing, whether it's leaving notes for your partner, setting up household challenges, how can you get that communication if the person isn't necessarily used to having a confrontation about we're in a circumstance that is unusual?
Yes, I think even reframing the notion of confrontation and really thinking about it as communication. And nowadays, with all of the information that is readily available to us online, on websites, on television, in magazines, you could even say, hey, I read this great article about this. How do you think this applies to us? You know, Rolling Out had a video clip the other day about this couple or family going through XYZ. What do you think about this? You know, I saw this on so-and-so's website. Even if it's a short, funny little clip, you know, that made me think about you, and here's why. So finding a way to kind of ease the opening of the conversation as opposed to setting it up as confrontation where you can immediately be faced with defensiveness because it comes across as one of these things instead of, you know, let's come together and talk and collaborate on working on this together.
During that time, you mentioned that even families might have levels of difficulty of intimacy. What do you suggest for couples that are dealing with that, given that they're still on top of each other, and how can they address that?
Absolutely. Again, if one of the things you were dealing with as a couple prior to the pandemic was challenges around sex, intimacy, closeness, even if it isn't about sex, even if it's about time as a couple together, to, you know, snuggle and watch a movie, whatever the case may be. It could be anywhere from that to actual sex and intercourse. If you're in the house with children and if you're already stressed with finances and meeting the deadlines of your work, naturally, you're going to have to kind of reassess what's important. Now, the interesting thing is for a lot of people, sex is a stress reliever. Intimacy is a security confirmation. And so you have to know yourself and know your partner and have, again, open but can be difficult, vulnerable conversations about what you need and what's feasible and what you're going to offer together. It's kind of hard to get in the mood if you've got children bouncing off the walls and if you're worried about, you know, finishing your work project by 5 o'clock and you don't know what you're going to eat, or, you know, you just went to the grocery store and the milk is gone and the eggs are gone. You know, those practical things may take precedence over something like intimacy. But again, when things quiet down, when you put the kids to bed, when they're off for a nap, or when they're working on their homeschooling, you can, you know, get some time in if that's what you all mutually are agreeable to, and something that will, again, make you feel close and secure and connected in ways above and beyond the obvious notion of being kind of stuck in the house together.
So how do you goal set as a family emotionally so that you grow?
Yeah, again, the dynamics of the family is going to impact what that looks like, and what that feels like and how you even begin the conversation. If you have young children, let's say, then obviously they're still learning how to use their words and express things in an open kind of balanced way. If you have teenagers or preteens nowadays going through puberty and they already have some feelings and, you know, behaviors that are, you know, kind of adding stress to the situation, one of the things that you do is, again, acknowledge what's in our faces and don't try to sweep things over the rug, under the rug, and try not to kind of minimize or amplify situations. You know, children model what they see and what they hear. And so I think it starts with the parents. And even if there's only one parent in the home, if your child senses that you're safe and secure and hopeful and optimistic, there's a higher probability that they're going to react that way. But if your children pick up on you being stressed out, overwhelmed, lack of sleep, lack of patience, then obviously things are going to escalate in the behaviors, and then you're just going to have everything in disarray. But if you really kind of center yourself emotionally, figure out what that looks like for you. For some people, it's starting the morning in prayer and meditation. For some people, it's doing their yoga every day. For other people, it's finding something funny to laugh at online. And so you kind of have to know what grounds you emotionally, and then you can nurture and pass that on to your children and let that sprinkle through the household.
Oh, that's great. For those individuals who could be listening, there are individuals losing their job. So unemployment is entering the home. The other group might be loss. So we have the dynamics of loss entering the home. What are the best ways that you have found a family can deal with the reduction in income and the loss of family members, kind of all colliding at the same time?
Yes, yes. One of the things, again, in addition to what you know, I refer to as a marriage and family therapist as normalizing the emotions, what you do is you set the stage that, yes, many of us are fearful. Many of us are anxious. Many of us are tired. Many of us are lonely. And then you don't dwell there. You become resourceful and intentional about your behaviors. I saw this organization online that is giving out food boxes. I read this article about this hotline if I am suffering from some kind of family violence, you know, physical abuse, sexual abuse, things of that nature. I noticed myself kind of drinking too much when I have all of this quote unquote free time, and maybe I need to slow down and call a hotline. And so when you think about it, the one message is you don't have to suffer alone and you don't have to suffer in silence. And that is pandemic or no pandemic. And so what's happening is, we have to spread the message even more so that it's okay for our community, for our people to not only reach out for help, but to be okay with receiving help and not have this kind of cloak of strength, or feel defeated and hopeless and helpless about the situation.
Super, super. So it appears that you believe communities and families need to communicate more often.
Absolutely. Communicate effectively. and communicate with a sense of problem solving and being solution oriented, as opposed to communicating solely from the standpoint of venting frustrations, if that makes sense.
No, I understand that. I really do. 'Cause it gets heavy when you start talking about money or intimacy or the fact that you've lost a friend and you're feeling depressed or lost. And many people will be feeling lost during this moment, because the pandemic has taken a lot of friends for people who are older in particular. For individuals who are looking for therapists, what's the best way for people to recognize that there is a need for a true professional intervention?
Yes, I think when you kind of run the gamut of venting to people and running up against the wall when you feel like you've been trying to address it on your own and you're getting the same result, then it's definitely time to reconsider having a professional. And the difference is, a professional is trained to kind of listen and help you walk through whatever you're dealing with from a position of being kind of there's no bias. There's no judgment. There's no, let me tell you how to solve your problems and fix your life. It's getting to know you, considering the circumstances, the context, and then seeing what's possible and feasible and helping you make the best decision for yourself. And I think sometimes that's what people miss. They say, oh, I don't need to talk to a therapist or a counselor. I can talk to my mom or my sister or, you know, my homeboy over here. And that's all well and good and can definitely be a resource because social support is equally important. There's a distinction between social support from a peer standpoint and from a professional standpoint. So it really comes down to first and foremost getting over some of our biases about therapy or counseling not being for us, not being accessible, and not being effective or worth it, if you will.
Super. Well, you've done a phenomenal job giving us insight. Are there any other things that you'd like us to understand that we need to think about as we're moving through this moment with COVID and the family?
Yeah, just expressing gratitude and expressing love. And I know it's easy to kind of get caught up in the depressing aspects of the media. It is very important to stay informed. But knowing also how to balance that with quality time with family, quality time in solitude, finding ways to express love and gratitude, appreciation for what you do have, and what gives you hope, kind of knowing what gives you hope. Again, for a lot of people, it's that spiritual foundation, it's their faith. For other people, they know that they have, you know, plans and things to look forward to in the future. And so letting that be what keeps you grounded and what keeps you centered as opposed to what's going on in the world. I like to think about or a tornado, if you will, and it's unfortunate that that metaphor is very real today. But if you can find a way to be the calm in the midst of the storm so that you can have some clarity and some peace, and be able to plan the next steps, that is what's going to keep you sane and whole and grounded.
Well, Dr. Thomas, we appreciate all that you give. Continue to serve this community in the capacity that you do. For anybody that needs to contact you, how can they reach out?
My social media handles are all Dr. Shay Speaks. That's D-R-S-H-A-Y Speaks, S-P-E-A-K-S. And my website is the same, drshayspeaks.com.
Super. All right, drshayspeaks.com. I'm Munson Steed with Health IQ. Rolling Out really appreciates all that you do. Dr. Thomas, you're phenomenal and a healer, and we appreciate you. Thanks so much from Health IQ. We're signing out. Peace.